Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Just talking to Janet has inspired me. I need to get some more letters onto my quilts, alphabets and stuff. So the second half of the show, I am going to do a sort of deep dive. I've invited Kimberly Imo to come on and chat with me in sort of in-depth on a few things. So this is a lot of fun. We get to really, really go into the topic. So Kimberly, thank you for being here.
Hey, Pat, how are you? And I'm thrilled to be with you.
Oh, thank you. You are just a doll. You are so sweet.
Now, well, that goes both ways. You know that.
So we're going to talk. We're going to do a couple different sort of more in-depth topics. Your studio is featured in American Patchwork and Quilting magazine, the current issue. All about storage, because you, my dear, are the storage queen.
Partly because I've moved so many times and had to set up so many studios. But, yeah, I think I've gotten a lot of experience of knowing what works and what doesn't in small spaces.
Yeah, and this is the January-February 2015 issue that's I think out right now, so people can go look for that. All right. So because you moved so much, your family was military family, you moved all over the place. When you finally have the home you're in now, you were like,
right,
I'm getting a studio.
Right, exactly. In fact, the hubby said, you know, this is finally, we're going to stay put somewhere, design what you want. So that was kind of a nice treat.
Now,
but I still had a budget.
You still had a budget.
Yeah.
Now I want to talk about what people can do about with some certain products, because you went in and just designed the whole thing from scratch, you know, and we can't all do that. We'd love to, but you know, you have good ideas about how to organize certain specific things,
and make them easily accessible. So for me, it was, and I chose a room in our home that was actually right up front by the front door because it had lots of good lighting. And it's really only about 16 by 17. It's not a great big room, had great lighting, but I decided I could do it by making every space count or every inch count. So when I was designing a wall of cupboards, it was important to me to make sure I could access the stuff underneath, because there's been a lot of places where people, they put stuff down in cupboards or drawers and then they can't, you know, it's uncomfortable to bend down or get down on the floor and pull stuff out. So one of the things I thought would be really neat was to have them on rollers and to make the shelves pull out. So you could actually access, you know, get access to the stuff in the deep, dark recesses.
That's a good idea, because you can do that inexpensively, can't you?
You sure can. Absolutely. Yeah. There's lots of great, even, you know, some of these discount stores or discount change stores, you can get those easily, those little plastic bins and things actually on rollers. So that's, they're pretty cheap, too. You know, or the like California closet systems are not particularly that name brand, but you know those closet systems, they have those pull out things. So trying to make, you know, the cupboards or the things that people stuff their fabric or their supplies back into, but then they forget it's back there because it's just, you know, hard to get at it. You want to make sure that you can pull them out. So that was important to me. And I do use a lot of like plastic bins and things.
So are you, I mean, I know that you personally are a very tidy, neat person. This is kind of your core person. So what can, you know, for the people who, you know, really aren't like that, like some of us, you know, when you have bins, are you, you know, what is a tip we can do with the bins to help us get control of the chaos?
Try to organize them by type, like all your Notions, or keep all your rotary blades, your replacement blades all together. And I, you know what, I also use tins, like leftover cookie tins or you know, candy tins, things that you get, you know, at Christmas for gifts. You know, I use those tins all the time. That's another thing that, you know, kind of repurposing, that you can store your things in, or I'll keep all my threads together. I actually use those plastic matchbox cases for my threads. Some of them I put on those little wood spools that are very inexpensive to pick up. Again, it's about organizing and just keeping everything together. So all my rulers are together in one spot, and just trying to keep them separated by type so that I can easily find my, you know, my tin full of scissors, or does that make sense? You know, or, and I also keep a neat little tote, very inexpensive. It's a little tote I picked up at a discount fabric store that I keep, the most used tools, like my seam rippers, my favorite snips, a little, a small ruler, tape measure, things like that are all in that little tote. And it's always easily accessible. So I don't have to go digging for these things every time I want to sit down and I have 10 minutes to sew.
I like the tote idea because yeah. I think everybody, well, of course, we probably all have totes. You probably don't even have
right.
to go buy one.
Right, you do.
The idea of what to actually put in it and why it's useful, that's...
Yeah, just... Well, the things, and again, just kind of think about what do you use most often and keep those things out and handy and accessible so you don't have to waste precious sewing time going hunting for those things. So always keep a rotary cutter handy. I always keep a little mat right next to my sewing machine, you know, just a small one. Mm-hmm. You know, just little things like that so I don't really have to go digging for things when I want to get something done.
And then also, you know, I noticed like you have a great, if people go to your website, KimberlyIMO.com, you have a place where you can see pictures of your studio and pictures of your organization.
Yes.
Yeah. So what do you have for your sewing machines? You have hoops and other things like that. How do you handle those? Because you're not using them every day.
Now, those are the things, that's a great question, Pat, because those are the things that I will actually put in those bottom drawers or the things that I don't use a lot, I will put in the back of a cupboard or in that bottom drawer or, you know, tuck underneath something. Sometimes some of those great big hoops, I even store standing up next to my desk, you know, so it just kind of slides in an area that's out of the way and I'm, you know, don't use them that often. So I try to keep the things I use a lot, like my rotary cutters, you know, really handy in a top drawer right where I know where they are and I can just get to it in a flash. And the things you don't use as much, those are the things you can store in those bottom drawers or the back of the cupboard or the top of the shelf, you know, where it's harder to get to.
Now, do you have any, like, method to the madness for remembering where you put them? Because I can just see this. I'm like, okay, I'm going to put these hoops in the back of this shelf because I never use them. And the day I want them, I'm like, where did I put the hoops?
Label makers are good for that. I don't have go so far as having a little chart, but I do actually kind of have like a list of things, and I have it taped up on the inside of one of those cupboard doors where, you know, it will tell kind of what's in that wall of cupboards. Now, the big things like batting and, you know, the yardage, I just keep downstairs in a closet, things that, you know, just takes up a lot of space. And batting's one of those, and I do, you know, kind of stock up on that. I do keep that out of the way, and I don't let that kind of stuff clutter up the other things. I keep more implements, the rulers and the cutters and things like that. The mats handy in that small space, but the actual yardage and things, that stays downstairs in a closet.
So how do you store your fabric? Are you like a by color? Are you by style?
Actually, I do. I store it by color or type. I have one cupboard of nothing but batiks because I'm a batik nut. But I store all my batiks together, and I do have them organized by color, you know, and I try to put, like, all my whites or tone-on-tones and off-whites all together and sort them that way. Just so it's easier to find what I'm looking for. But I'm also, they are in cupboards and I do have a front on them. I know it's not as pretty as being able to see them, but I want to make sure that they don't get exposed to light or dust or, you know, so it, because some of those things I've learned in the past when I had yardage stored where it was the sun was getting to it. Then when I unfolded it, there was a little like, you know, places where it had faded. So I do keep them behind closed doors.
Now, you also work a lot with pre-cuts, and you know, they stack on themselves, you know, like jelly rolls will stack nicely, but, you know, do you keep those, you know, together?
Those are handy.
Yeah,
I keep those. I keep them stacked, actually, just the way it shows in the magazine as they took pictures on pull-out drawers, because I use pre-cuts all the time. They're my go-to when I just am ready to work on something fun or I've got a new idea. That's typically where I'll go first, even before I go to the yardage, just because I enjoy them so much. I can't stop.
You can't stop. No, you can't.
I can't stop. It's like Lay's potato chips. You can't stop once you get started with them.
Yeah. And one of the fun things, if you know, Kimberly has a lot of books, and several of them have patterns for pre-cuts, and Moda Bake Shop also has patterns for pre-cuts. And also the Moda Bake Shop tells you what all the measurements are, so that if you're not sure, well, what is a layer cake, you can go to the Moda Bake Shop.
It's like pre-cuts 101. They have it all spelled out there, which I love. And kind of some great ideas about what you can do with all those things, all those different kinds of pre-cuts. Which is, you know, really fabulous. I find the best thing to do is combine those, you know, put a layer cake and a jelly roll together, because it kind of opens up double the design opportunities by combining those.
Right. Could you have a big square, like, you know, for charm packs or layer cakes, and then the jelly rolls or the strips. So, okay. So I'm going to switch gears just a little bit on now, Kimberly, because I want you to tell me about your fabulous quilt that won the best modern quilt in 2014 at the AQS show. I mean, it's just fantastic. Tell us a little bit about that.
Fire and Ice. That was a quilt that I had in my head for a long time. And finally, I used EQ software and drafted it out. And again, it's just made with 2.5-inch strips. And I happen to use all batiks, but just, you know, tried to combine the cool and warm tones together and left a lot of background space for the quilting, which was beautifully done by Judy Madsen of Green Fairy Quilts. So, and that's my favorite quilt of all time.
Yeah. And it's big.
It is. It is almost 80 inches square. It is large.
Yeah, I think if anybody sees just the photo of it, you might think, oh, it's a wall hanging. But no, it is impressive.
No. It is really big, and it's heavy. You know, there's just a lot of thread in it.
Yeah. When you were designing that, you know, how did you work through? You said you did it in EQ, but did you sketch first in advance and in a pad or something?
That's a great question. No, I actually was still using EQ. I started very basically with just a Lone Star, and then I broke it up into four quadrants and started rotating those blocks around. The other thing I did was I took out all the colors. So I worked in black, white, and gray, just worked in grayscale, and took that quarter of a Lone Star portion of a block and just kept multiplying it and rotating it until I got the design looking really great just in a grayscale. And then it was really fun to, you know, add in the colors. But really it just started by just kind of letting my mind wander and just playing with that quadrant and just, you know, multiplying the blocks and editing. Actually, when I started out, it was a lot more detailed, but because I knew this was going to be more of a modern quilt, it's kind of a minimalist effect. So I kept editing and editing and pulling blocks out, which left all that background space.
I think that's fascinating. It started with a Lone Star, because you do a lot with Lone Stars.
I do. I love diamonds. I think diamonds and pre-cuts are just made for each other. I just think that's an untapped potential of, you know, just so many different design ideas of using those diamonds and pre-cuts. And again, I was doing it based on those 2.5-inch strips because I just love working with them.
You need to meet Janice that I talked to at the earlier in the show, because that woman is not afraid of anything. She's sewing all kinds of stuff together. That's
her quilts are beautiful.
I know. So what we're going to do is, Kimberly, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I asked on my Facebook group for a bunch of questions. I asked people what stumps you about quilt making? What are the things you have questions on? And so I sent Kimberly.
Perfect.
Sent you this list, and you were like, yes, because you're going to share with us some tips and things about how to do that. And also, just in case, I don't want to miss this, but people can take workshops with you online at craftsy.com too. So
Yes. I have four different classes on there.
Yeah, so if you hear something, you know, that you want to know more, take a class with Kimberly, you can do that online. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and Kimberly Imo is here. Yay, Kimberly! All right,
I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, we have some questions. I put them sort of in order of how you might be doing things, you know, so rather than randomly. yeah, jumping around.
I was so
around.
Impressed with the questions that you had when I was reading through the list. These were all great questions.
Yeah, I have
really excellent.
I have a lot of people who are new or people who have done maybe a specific type of quilt and haven't really branched out. So, you know, these questions come from a whole variety of people. So let's start at the beginning. So one of the questions that I thought was really, really good was, you know, what about preparing the fabric? You know, why is it important to prepare it? How do you prepare it? What's a good method? You know, what is good practice for preparing before you start to work with it?
Well, I always, if I can, I always like to pre-wash my fabrics. I really do. If I have yardage, it goes into the washer and into the dryer before I ever get to it. But then when I'm pressing those fabrics after they've been washed, I like to use magic sizing or, you know, just fabric sizing, spray sizing. Starch works too. I just have found that sizing works great for me. It doesn't leave a residue, and it's also not a food source for critters because it's synthetic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I really like sizing.
So, okay. So the wrinkles. Now, some people, you know, they may not be washing in advance and they may not be, you know, doing all that. But tell me why it's important to have smooth fabric.
Well, you can't cut accurately if your fabric is wrinkled or rumpled, and you really want it flat and crisp. So even if you don't pre-wash, you should still press those wrinkles out. And if you've got stubborn wrinkles, you know, and you don't have the spray sizing or the starch, then I would recommend moistening it a little bit or using like a spray bottle, empty Windex bottle that you filled with water and spritzing it or hitting it with a shot of steam, because you really want your fabrics as flat and crisp and wonderful as possible so that you get the most accurate cuts when you're rotary cutting.
Yeah, and I think that's why people might run into trouble is because they're just like, oh, I'm in a hurry. Oh, it looks pretty smooth, you know, so. Okay,
no,
so
you really need to do that. That's one thing that's going to make your quilting improve, like, dramatically right away.
So let's talk about the cutting, because people, you know, there are like about 800,000 types of rulers out there, at least. And some have gription on the bottom, some don't. Some people have had rulers since the beginning of time, and they're still using the same ones.
Right.
So, you know, the problem is people have is that they slip or they feel like they slip. What are some good habits?
I think actually for me, the most important thing you can do is make sure that you know how to rotary cut accurately and maybe take a refresher course either through your local quilt shop or on Craftsy or you know, wherever, just so that you know that you're cutting really accurately. But the next thing that you can do, I think, and I've seen some quilters actually sit down and rotary cut. I don't believe that you can be accurate when you're just sitting down, because your body isn't over the top of it. So you're kind of looking at everything distorted. Mm-hmm. If you're standing up and you center your weight over the top of your fabrics and you're cutting it at a good height, if possible, you know, like a kitchen counter height or, you know, You need to have something at a good height where you're not, you know, bending over and ruining your back. That way you can center your weight over it and use your hand. Your hand is your best friend as far as keeping your rulers from slipping. What I like to do is I cut right-handed, but on my left hand where I'm holding the rotary, the ruler itself, I take my pinky and I put it off the ruler and onto the fabric right next to it. So my pinky kind of locks it in place. Mm-hmm. And I find that's a really good way to help steady the ruler and keep it from slipping or sliding.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of different tools. Some people, if you don't have any gription on the bottom, they might be able to buy a gription thing to stick on, so they don't have to buy a new ruler. There's also like those handles. Some people like those, that sort of suction cup handles.
Sure, sure. And if possible, if there's a way they could go to their local quilt shop and maybe try some of these things and see what works for them. Yeah. I just want people to know that they don't have to have all those fancy things.
Right.
That, you know, even if you have a 6x24-inch ruler and a rotary cutter and that's all you have, you can still cut everything with that.
Yeah. Yeah, perfect, perfect, perfect. All right. Now, the next thing is that, okay, so people got your ruler straight. What about cutting straight lines? Apparently, you know, it is sometimes hard. I think, you know, you and I have had a lot of practice with this, but when you're starting out, you're not used to cutting long lines. What are some tips there?
Well, try not to, you know, I fold my fabric, my yardage, and I fold it so that I'm cutting selvage to selvage. But I don't fold it in half. I almost fold it like with a third of it over. So it's, you know, it's folded in half once, like it comes off the bolt. But then I fold it again so that I'm not cutting, you know, 22 inches. I'm cutting more like 18 inches.
Mm.
Yeah, that means that I'm cutting four layers. But if you have a really sharp rotary cutter, it shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah. And then are you pressing when you get to the fold at the top? Are you being sure your hand is there to keep it flat?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And otherwise, if you have to stop and readjust your hand, you can keep your rotary cutter actually on the mat in the fabric and don't move that cutting hand, but move the hand that you're holding the ruler very, very carefully. Then you can readjust and readjust your pressure on that ruler.
So let's switch over to the machine.
Okay.
You know, we sew a lot of seams as quilters, and sometimes the seams are very long. And people have asked, how do you sew long seams straight?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. Takes practice, for one. And it also takes a machine that where you have the proper presser foot pressure. And a lot of people don't consider this. Your machine may or may not have the ability to adjust the presser foot pressure. So how much pressure is the presser foot holding that fabric? If it's too much, that fabric may kind of bow or go in a direction you don't want it to. The other thing, I find that if your machine is working properly, the feed dogs and the presser foot should do the work. You don't have to tug or push or pull. Your hands are there to guide it through straight, but let the machine do the work.
Right.
And, you know, the other thing is maybe control that speed just a little bit. I know a lot of people like to race, you know, but I'm more controlled. That doesn't mean I'm the slowest sewer in the world. I have a good moderate speed, but one that I feel I can control it instead of just, you know, flooring it and making it go as fast as I can. I just try to control it and make sure that I keep control of the strips so that they're not wobbly.
So once you have strips and you have blocks and you're starting to piece everything together, you know, there's lots of things you can read about for which way to press the seam. What are some guidelines for pressing the seam?
Well, and I think, this is a great one, too, because you quilters, especially new quilters, will hear you always press to the darker fabric. Well, yeah, generally you do. But there are actually times I find it works better to press away from diagonal seams. For example, if you have a half square triangle and you're sewing it to a square, and that square may be a white fabric and you have dark fabrics on that half square triangle, sometimes I actually press towards the square. So I'm pressing the seam away from the diagonal seam in that half square triangle. Yeah, it kind of goes against the general knowledge of, oh, you need to always press towards the dark. But when you can press towards the least complicated unit, or the one that has the least amount of seams, it will lay flatter.
Right. That's an excellent point, because you want it to lay as flat as possible. You don't want the seam taking up more than it should.
Right, okay, exactly.
The other biggie, the award-winning question everybody wants to know, how do you sew without chopping off your points?
Well, and again, that kind of goes way back to the beginning, really, because for each step along the way, all the way back from pressing your fabrics to cutting them, accuracy is key. So when you're sewing each of your units together, you want to make sure to stop and check and make sure you've got the quarter-inch seam allowance left over before you sew it to the next unit that it's going to create the block. And always taking care to maybe true up those units as you go. Say you're piecing a 16-inch block or even a 12-inch block. Sometimes it doesn't hurt to stop and make sure that you're sewing very accurately, that your smaller units, like your half-square triangles or your flying geese or your four patches, measure what they're supposed to measure and making the adjustments before you get that block sewn together. And then you won't have so much wonkiness. It'll also help you match those points and make sure that you're not chopping them off because you left a good quarter-inch seam allowance as you started and progressed through each small unit.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is sometimes I'll flip it so that I can see where that point is, you know, rather than it being underneath, which would maybe make more sense for it sewing wise to be the underneath part. But if I can flip it so I can see it, then I know where I'm going.
Exactly, exactly. That's a great point, especially when you're trying to hit that point. The other thing is if you've got an intersection, you always want to try to hit with your sewing machine needle just one thread maybe outside of that point, so that when you press the seam to one side and you open the unit or the block up, then the bulk is into that seam and you get the perfect point.
Ooh, that's
a good tip. One stitch away.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good tip. Okay, let's do one more really, really quick.
Okay.
Bulky seams. Do you make them open? Does that help?
Yes, I do, especially when you've got like six fabrics coming together or eight mm-hmm. fabrics. Think about those Lone Stars or the Lemoine Stars or even pinwheels where you have eight fabrics coming together at a center point. Mm-hmm. I always press the last two seams open. And this is something I've just started doing recently, like within the last couple of years. I actually have a tool that I just swear by. It's called the strip stick, and I will press those last seams open over that, and it is just magic. It makes the block completely flat and takes the bulk out. The other thing that's really good to do is to cut off those dog ears as you go. Don't mm-hmm. leave the dog ears into those seams, because if you've got dog ears left over and they're all coming together to make a point where you've got eight fabrics, it's just too much bulk in the seams. So that's something else you can do to eliminate some of the bulk.
Kimberly, this has been fantastic. Thank you so, so much.
Oh, I really enjoyed it. And these were really great questions that your Facebook readers posted. I really enjoyed going through those and thinking about them.
Yeah, I made you work.
Yeah, that's okay. I enjoyed it. It was very insightful.
So everybody can visit Kimberly out at Kimberly Imo, EINMO.com, and you can see her online. And I thank you very much.
Oh, thanks, Pat. It's always fun talking to you.
This is Pat Sloan for American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. Visit American Patchwork magazine at allpeoplequilt.com. You can visit me at patsloan.com and find me out on the internet, where I hope to see you and see what you're working on. And we will have another show next week. See you then.